Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now here is your guide to these adventures of mine.
Now, here's your...
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Fibber and Molly. This episode of Fibber and Molly comes from November 6th, 1945. The episode is entitled Fudge. And I think we're going on another cooking expedition with Fibber McGee. And I don't know why Molly allows him to even touch her kitchen. I mean, I wouldn't let him do it. No way. But Molly keeps thinking that Fibber will get something right eventually. Who knows? Anyway, after this is My Favorite Husband from October 21st, 1950. The episode's entitled Safety Driving. I think it has something to do with Liz learning to drive. Although she was driving before, previously. So it's something about driving, that's all I know. And after this is Our Miss Brooks from October 22nd, the day after 1950. The episode is entitled Stretch is in Love Again. And The Halls of Ivy from December 26th, 1951. The episode is entitled Sweet Sorrow. And You Bet Your Life from March 22nd, 1950. The episode is entitled The Secret Word is Money. Enjoy all of these, and I'll see you all back here next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. I've mentioned quite a few unusual uses for Johnson's Wax. As a matter of fact, I've been getting some very interesting letters passing along more of these helpful suggestions, and I intend to mention them from time to time. But today, I'd like to go back for just a moment to fundamentals and talk about the real number one purpose of Johnson's Wax, the principal reason for using it. It's protection, of course. Protection for the finish of your floors, your tabletops, windowsills. Yes, and your leather goods, refrigerator, and countless other things. The wax itself takes the wear. The finish underneath is safe. That's why in times like these, it's so important to keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly waxed. After all, it does save you hours of work, too. And that's important right now for all of us. And it makes your entire home gleam and glow with protected beauty. Kramer's Drugstore in Westville Vista is noted for two things. Its wonderful chocolate fudge and the fact that it usually hasn't got any. But today the sale is on. And here, just home with a bag, big bag full of the confection, we find Molly of Fibber McGee and Molly.
McGee, you know what I got at Kramer's Drugstore?
Don't tell me you bought some of that quick-drying fountain pen ink at Kramer's. That stuff is terrible.
Why is it?
I had some of that on my last trip to Peoria.
You did, huh?
You know how you always shake your pen at a hotel wall to see if the ink is flowing right?
Yeah.
Well, that stuff dries before it hits the wall. Rattles against the wallpaper like you were throwing buckshot.
Well, that's too bad. But that isn't what I started to tell you. Kramer's were having a special
sale. That outfit's always having a special sale. They think a 1 cent sale means giving you 4 pennies for a nickel.
Yeah, but this was a...
Kramer's idea of a bargain is giving you two of something you don't want with something you gotta have for half again what you'd have to pay if you went someplace you'd rather go to if it wasn't raining.
Now, look, dearie, will you stop interrupting me a minute?
Huh?
Telling you something is like trying to lie on your back and play badminton with hailstones.
I'm sorry, Molly. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead and talk.
Thank you. I was just going to say that I bought...
I hate it. It's a guy that won't let the other guy talk.
I know that. That's why
it's
I was...
Form of egotism. That's what it is. Thinks what he has to say is so much more important than what the other guy is saying. He just can't keep his big fat mouth shut.
Exactly. Now then, when I was down at Kramer's Drugstore... For goodness sakes, McGee, will you please let me talk?
Why, that wasn't me, Mommy. That was the doorbell.
What? Oh, pardon me. Come in.
Mrs. McGee?
Yes?
I'm your new neighbor next door. If we should go away for a few days, would you take care of our boxer?
Oh, you betcha, sis. I'm very fond of dogs.
Oh, this isn't a dog. Huh? It's our cousin, Punchy McClatchy. Thank you very much.
My goodness, did you ever hear of Punchy McClatchy, McGee?
Sure. 6 feet of fighting scar tissue who couldn't batter his way out of a hairnet. Known in prize fight circles as the Waltz King. Gone into more dives than an MP in Paris. And made a will leaving his jaw to the Libby Owens Glass Company. But tell me, kiddo, what were you saying about Kramer's? You got me interested.
Well, this morning I had a terrific desire for some good chocolate fudge, so...
Fudge? Well, why didn't you say so? Don't give it another thought, Snooky. I'll whip you up a batch of fudge. The old-fashioned kind.
Oh, please, McGee, you don't have to make me any fudge because
Your wish is my command, madame. You says you were hungry for fudge, so you get fudge. Now then, what do I need to make fudge? Cocoa? Eggs? Eggs? No, don't need eggs. Hand me the phone. I got to call the grocery.
Here, but now listen.
Thanks. Hello, operator. Give me Jimmy Sales Grocery and Meat. Mark my words, it's her.
Who?
Murd. How's every little thing, Murd? Yeah. What's a Murd? Your married sister. In an interesting condition, eh?
Ah, isn't that nice?
No. She was studying ballet and got her foot caught behind her neck. What's that, Mert? Yeah, the grocery store. Thanks. Hello, Sales Grocery. Fibber McGee speaking. I just called to order some eggs, but I happen to think you don't need eggs to make fudge, so forget the whole thing. Well, here we go, laughing and scratching. Come on out in the kitchen, baby.
McGee, for the last time...
But it probably won't be the last time, Tootsie. When you fling a fang into this fudge I'm going to make, you'll realize why the chief of the Waldorf is a man.
That's pronounced chef, dearie.
It is? Well, when I was in the army, I cooked a mess of baked beans for the commander in chief.
That's chief.
I cooked a mess of beans for the commander in chief that were so wonderful, he wanted to know the name of the chief that cooked them.
Chef.
The chef that cooked them. So I tells the commander in chief, I says...
Chief.
Where's the saucepan? Ah, here we are.
Those are frying pans, McGee.
So what? Didn't you ever eat any fried fudge? Frying brings out all the delicate... Hey. What are we keeping this thing for?
That's a colander.
Well, it's full of holes. I only want the best equipment in any kitchen of mine. Throw that thing out the window.
Certainly.
Thanks. Now then, a double boiler.
Why a double boiler?
I always boil my fudge twice. Now let me see. Salt, pepper. Boy, is this fudge going to be good. Look at that rich brown color.
Yep, like the back of an old boxing glove.
Boy, get a load of that smooth, creamy consistency. This stuff is going to turn out to be pure velvet.
Yes, one bite and you have a long nap.
If it turns out as good as I expect, I might put it on the market. Fibber's Fine Fudge.
Oh, my.
I can just see the billboards. Feeling foul, folks? Why fret, fume, or fuss? Feed your face with a fistful of Fibber's Fine Fudge.
If feeling low with work and drudgery, drop in on Fibber's Fancy Fudgery.
Ah, that's great. I'll make the name of Fibber McGee anonymous with fine candy every place.
You mean synonymous, dearie.
Hmm?
It starts with a sin, and if you think I'm whistling Dixie, you're tone deaf.
I'll have my fudge in every drugstore in the United States. Bye, George. I'll... Come in.
Oh, it's Mayor LaTrivia. Out here in the kitchen, Your Honor.
Oh. Hello, Molly. Hello, McGee.
Hi, LaTrivia. Have a chair and watch a master confectioner confect a confection.
What witch's brew are you concocting there, McGee? If you're working on synthetic rubber, don't go any further. A set of tires that smelled like that would set the automotive industry back 75 years.
He's making fudge, Your Honor.
Oh, fudge.
What was that last crack, LaTrivia?
I merely said, oh, fudge, indicating that I had, with my usual perspicacity, grasped the situation.
Oh.
May I make a suggestion?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
Well, every time I drop in for a friendly chat, we seem to conclude with some unseemly conversational brawl. Now, let us for once not get into an argument.
Oh, it's okay with me, LaTriv. I'm a peaceful citizen. I can get along with anybody.
Well, now, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Ah, splendid. People who go around with chips on their shoulders
just
are
leave
not...
my father out of this, LaTrivia. That's
your father? What did I say about your...
His father was a carpenter, Mr. Mayor.
And just because an honest cabinet maker has a few chips on his shoulder doesn't give...
Oh, I was speaking in a rhetorical sense, McGee. I certainly did not mean actual chips.
My father used phony chips? Now, just a darn minute, LaTrivia. There's no more honest people in the world than carpenters. And
I didn't say a word about carpenters. You brought that up.
No, he brought McGee up.
I mean an honest chipmaker, a carving honester. When a man has a chip on his father...
Stop shouting at my wife, LaTrivia.
I was not shouting. I was not shouting at your wife.
Well, who were you shouting at, Mr. Mayor?
At your husband.
Speak up, LaTrivia, speak up. If you got anything to say, out with it. Quit mumbling.
I was only trying to... When I attempted... I was hoping that for once we... McGee, don't you like me?
Why, of course he likes you, Mr. Mayor.
You're a fine chap, LaTrivia. Inclined to fly off the handle now and then, like a cheap hatchet. But a fine chap for all of that.
Thank you. Then, before I leave, may I tell you something I've never said to anyone else?
Why, of course, Your Honor.
What is it, old man?
Simply this, McGee. You have dripped that horrible mess of fudge all over the front of your shirt and pants. And on you, it looks good.
Why on earth do you suppose he doesn't like carpenters?
Just a frustration, I'd say. Probably wanted to be a carpenter himself and couldn't.
Yeah.
Because he always puts the wrong construction on everything.
Yeah, that may be. Yeah. Oh, McGee, you've spilt that stuff all over the floor.
Ah, so what? I got plenty left. I made a double recipe.
Hey,
so
everybody home?
Out here in the kitchen, Mr. Wilcox.
Oh, hi, Junior.
Hello, pal. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. Do you like fudge?
Is that what he's making there?
Yes.
No.
Am I to misconstrue that as a reflection on my cooking, Junior?
If the shoe fits, pal, you can walk for miles without finding an argument. Gee, I wish you had a copy of my cookbook.
Your cookbook?
I never knew you were interested in cooking, Mr. Wilcox. Family recipes, aren't they?
No, I just stole them here and there. You know the old saying, if you steal from one author, it's plagiarism. But if you steal from everybody, it's research. Well, mine's research.
Now, looky here, Junior, looky here. I know you, and I know you ain't doing this strictly for the benefit of frazzled females. You got a gimmick in there someplace.
Well, there is one little device I thought was interesting.
Stand by, Racine.
Here it comes.
Well, you see, every time I mention eggs or gravy or soup or anything that's liable to be spilled, I add a footnote. It says, remember, spilled things are easily wiped up if your kitchen linoleum is protected by Johnson's self-polishing glow coat.
Why, that's a very unobjectionable reminder, I'd say.
Yeah, that's the vicious part of this guy's approach, Molly. He sneaks up on you like Aunt Tessie's elderberry wine.
And in the chapter on preparations, of course, I tell how to keep the kitchen always ready for use. How to pour out little Johnson's glow coat, spread it around, and let it dry with no rubbing or buffing necessary. And how it beautifies the linoleum and makes it last 6 to 10 times longer. And then, hey, what time is it?
6 to 10.
Oh, gee, I gotta go. I'll see you later, folks.
Hey, don't you want to wait and have some fudge?
No, thanks.
I always thought you had quite a sweet tooth, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, I have, but my sweet tooth takes advice from my wisdom tooth. So long now.
Imagine Mr. Wilcox an author.
Ah, patah. All it takes to be an author these days is an idle summer and a publisher with too big an income tax.
Well, passing up that fertile subject for the time being, dearie. Move aside while I wipe up that spilt fudge.
Okay, I gotta beat this pan for a little more anyway. You know, this baking soda don't mix in very good.
Baking soda? Did you put baking soda in that fudge?
Why, certainly. It makes it light and fluffy. It's the vinegar that gives it that sharp, tangy smell.
Vinegar? Oh, now, McGee, after all, you don't put everything into making fudge.
I didn't put everything into it. Look at all the stuff on the shelf there I didn't use. Celery salt, onion flakes, horseradish. Hey, horseradish with a dash of horseradish.
No. Don't stir it so hard, dear. You keep spilling it.
Okay. I'll beat it out on the back porch and whip it. I'll be back in a minute. Oh, I bought a little goat and his name was Jack, but he got so homesick I had to give him back.
Oh. Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, Teeny. Now, don't get too close to me now. I might splash some of this on you. And it's hot stuff in more ways than one.
Hey. What you making, mister? What you making? Watch out.
Fudge, sis. And if you keep quiet like a good kid, I'll let you help me lick the pan.
Oh, boy. Gee. Thanks, mister. I love fudge.
You do, eh?
Hmm?
I says you do, eh?
Do what?
Love fudge.
I know it.
Take a gander at that, sis. Beautiful, eh? Bet you never saw any fudge that color before.
I bet you I never saw anything that color before, baby.
Well, making good fudge is a fine art, sis.
Mm-hmm.
I ever tell you why they call it fudge?
Oh, no.
Well, sir, hundreds of years ago, even before one man's family was on the air, there was a family of little elves lived in a great big forest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what an elf is, sis.
Sure I do, I bet you. My daddy is an elf. He goes down to the elf's club every day.
No, I didn't say elk. I said elf. brownies, gnomes, leprechauns, pixies, elves. I mean, elves.
Okay.
Well, sir, one day the chief of the elves, a little fellow named Eggduff, was out for a beetleback ride, and he fell off his beetle and got lost.
Oh.
And he wandered around getting hungrier and hungrier till he come to a place where some human beings had been having a picnic.
Oh, how'd he know human beings had been there, mister? How did he?
Well, because the grass was all torn up and the trees had initials carved all over them, and there was tin cans laying all around and dirty newspapers and broken glass and all stuff like that there. Nobody makes a mess like that except human beings. Well, sir, little Egg Duff climbs around looking for something to eat, and he finds a little crumb of brown candy. He eats it. It's delicious. And he eats some more.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets so much strength and energy, he walks right straight home again without any trouble.
Oh, gee, goody.
And he tells all the other little elves all about the wonderful stuff he'd found, and they all wanted some. So being a bright little elf, little Egg Duff got a bee, got him to bring him some honey, and he milked a few milkweed plants to get some milk, and made a batch of the finest fudge you ever saw.
Oh, where'd they get the chocolate, mister?
Well, they got off of the beetle's cocoa. They got it all right. Anyway, all the little elves were so happy about it and so grateful to Egg Duff and got to like fudge so much. Do you know what they did?
Sure.
Huh?
They call it fudge on account of that Egg Duff spelled backwards.
What?
Well, I gotta go now. So long, mister.
One of all the little point killers I ever heard. I still think that's it. Snuggle up to people and kick them in the teeth. Oh, yeah.
Heavenly days, McGee. Haven't you finished making that fudge yet?
No, not quite. I had to boil it over again.
Why?
I couldn't taste the mint sauce.
Mint sauce? McGee, this is going to be the most horrible...
Now. Take it easy, Mommy. Take it easy. Hand me the vanilla, will you? Please?
Certainly, sir. Here you are.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah. That ought to do it.
It really should. I haven't smelled so much vanilla since I walked past the stag line at our high school graduation dance. Ah, McGee, for goodness sakes, you get...
Come in.
Who is it?
Dr. Gamble, Molly, where are you?
Oh, we're out in the kitchen, Doc. Come on out.
Well, well, this is a happy little domestic scene. You look cute in that apron, McGee. The only difference between you and Ann Sheridan is that you look like Bull Montana.
He's making a batch of fudge, Doctor.
Oh? Geez, smells swell. Let me stir it a while, McGee.
Okay, kid, come on. You stir 5 minutes and I'll stir 5 minutes.
Oh,
okay?
For goodness. Here, Doctor, here's an apron for you, too. The Tomaine sisters at work.
You interested in cooking, Doc?
Love it. Ever eat any of my guinea hen Maryland with sauce Gamble?
No. Never been in Maryland, Doc.
Oh.
I got a great little recipe for barbecued meatballs with wild rice. You see, you get yourself a pig.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but wait till you try my spinach ring.
Hmm?
And my salami cacciatore. Brother, you haven't lived till you've tasted that. Now, look, first you take some dry sherry.
No. I never use dry sherry, Doc.
No?
Always wet sherry. The dry sherry...
Now, look, boys, am I in the way here? I can just as well go out on the porch and smoke a cigar.
No. Stick around, Molly. We'll just... Say, isn't this fudge about done, McGee? Look, it's getting hard.
Well, drop a drop of it into this glass of cold water, Doc. If it forms a little bead... It's ready to cool.
Okay.
Ah. Very interesting. Sank like a mother's heart at Willie's first haircut.
It's done, Doc. It's done. Here, I'll put it out in this pan.
Boy, that really looks marvelous, McGee. That's the only green and purple fudge I ever saw.
Much obliged for helping me, Doc.
You can have the first taste of it when it gets cool.
Oh, no, no. It's your recipe. You're entitled to the first bite.
Oh, no. You're the guest. You first.
Oh, well, let's compromise. We'll let Molly have the first
taste. No, you don't. No, no.
Why, Molly, I made this just for you. Gee whiz, after all the trouble I went to because you were hungry for some good homemade fudge, my gosh.
All right, all right. Now get out of my kitchen, both of you. I'll let you know when it's cool. I've got to clean up in here. I haven't seen so many dirty pans since the Elks put on their last minstrel show.
Well, okay, Molly. Say, come on, McGee. I want to tell you about my venison fricassee.
Yeah, and I want to give you my recipe for pineapple upside-down muffins, Doc.
Oh, yeah.
First you take a pineapple, uh-huh. Then you turn it upside down.
Ah, dear. There goes a good kid. Two good kids, in fact. Too good to be on the receiving end of what I have in mind when I look around this wreck of a kitchen. But now to dump out this murder mixture. And put the fudge I bought at Kramer's on a plate. There we are. And three lives saved. All right, boys, the fudge is cool. Come and get it. Come on. Ah, the patter of little feet.
Well, didn't take long to cool off, did it?
Why, certainly not. I had sense enough to drop a couple of ice cubes in it the last time I boiled it. Hey, this looks wonderful, Molly. Sure changes color when it gets cool, don't it?
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ah, that's as fine a looking platter of goodies as I ever surveyed with these astigmatic old orbs. McGee, you're wonderful.
I told you it'd be okay when it got cool.
Mm-hmm.
Have a piece, Doc.
Thanks. Molly?
Thank you.
My gosh, it's delicious.
Yeah, it's the best fudge I ever ate.
It's simply grand, McGee.
Well, I'm glad you like it, folks. Make you some anytime you like. That's a wonderful recipe I made up, if I do say so myself. And you know the most miraculous thing about it?
No.
What?
When it cools off, it's even got nuts in it.
No one likes to do jobs that aren't necessary, least of all now when everybody has to do his or her work. And yet, we have to take even better care of our things than we did before. What's the answer? Well, as far as your kitchen and other linoleum floors are concerned, it's Johnson's Glow Coat. Glow Coat does save you unnecessary work, and it does preserve your linoleum. Its regular use makes linoleum surfaces last 6 to 10 times longer. Can you ask more than that, with work saving in the bargain? Glow Coat is self-polishing and needs no rubbing or buffing. Its application is the simplest thing in the world. You just apply and let dry. Come back in 20 minutes to find your floors shining with beauty. Colors as fresh as when you first picked out the pattern in your dealer's showroom. Also, if you have floors of asphalt or rubber tile, Johnson's Glow Coat is the polish you should use.
Hey, Molly. Is that fudge all gone?
Well, I'm just finishing the last piece, dearie.
Okay. By the way, you started to tell me about something you got at Kramer's drugstore. What was that?
Well, now let me think. I had it on the tip of my tongue just a minute ago.
Never mind. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob. I just thought I would step in here and explain a little bit about what this episode is about. I was kind of close, but not close enough. Yes, Liz is driving, but Liz also got a ticket while downtown, and she has to spring it on George, who just was told that he's in charge of the safe driving program through the Chamber of Commerce. So he's chairman of that committee, and Liz hasn't told him yet about her ticket. I think her fourth ticket, if I'm not mistaken. So that's what this episode's about. So enjoy this episode of My Favorite Husband from December 21st, 1950.
It's the Gay Family Series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the town of Sheridan Falls, where the Coopers live, it's an average Wednesday morning. The traffic on Elm Street is fairly heavy. The cars are moving along about as usual. Except, wait a minute. Pull over to the curb. Here comes a woman driver. Go, pull over to the curb, get out, and lie flat on the sidewalk. It's Liz Cooper.
Hey, lady, hold it there. Just a minute there.
Were you whistling at me, officer?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I was. Yes.
What for?
Guess.
Well, let's see. Oh, I know. You want me to buy some tickets for the policeman's ball.
No, guess again.
You were just being friendly and wanted to say hello?
No, and you're getting colder.
Well, I give up. What did you want?
Well, I hate to be rude.
Oh, that's all right.
According to the law, when a driver intends to turn, he indicates the choice of his direction by a certain specific arm signal.
I know.
Then why didn't you make a signal?
I made a signal.
You signaled for a right turn and you turned left.
I know, but it's all right. I can explain.
Well, then, pray do.
Well, yesterday at this corner, I signaled left, and then I decided to go straight. So I had one coming. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
It's perfect, perfect.
Well, then what's that you're writing?
It's a story for the Reader's Digest. On the most unforgettable character I ever met. Here's your ticket.
Katie?
Yes, Mrs. Cooper.
Is Mr. Cooper home yet?
Yes, ma'am. He's in the living room.
Oh, dear. I wanted time to think up a good story.
What is it now?
A traffic ticket. What can I tell him?
Mrs. Cooper, why don't you just march in and tell him straight out what you've done?
You mean go in and tell him the truth?
Yes.
I never thought of that.
Why don't you try it?
I think I will. I was fresh out of alibis anyway. Wish me luck, Katie.
Hi, honey. Oh, when did you get home?
Oh, just a minute ago. How's my little husband?
Ah, fine. How about a kiss? Honey, I have something to tell you.
I have something to tell you, too.
Oh, but mine's so important.
Mine's important, too.
Yeah, but mine won't keep.
Mine won't either.
Look, this could go on all night. Now, let's decide which one's going to tell their news first.
Well, I think the prettiest one in the room should talk first.
Well, all right.
Well, as I was
this
driving
morning
down...
at the bank, I got a phone call.
I yield to the beautiful doll in the gray flannel suit.
Well, if you insist.
Go right ahead.
Honey, the greatest thing happened today.
What?
I got a call from the Chamber of Commerce, and I've been chosen as chairman of the Sheridan Falls Safe Driving Week. Now, what was your news?
My news?
Yeah. What were you going to tell me?
Well, I was just going to say, we're having dinner tonight.
Where?
Here.
We're having dinner at home. This is your news?
Dull, ain't it?
Oh, come on. Now, that isn't what you were going to say, is it?
Well, I'll get it. You wait there, George.
Did I hear the door?
Mrs. Cooper got it, Katie.
Oh, well, how'd you take it, Mr. Cooper?
Take what?
Mrs. Cooper's news about the traffic ticket.
What traffic ticket?
Well, didn't she? Oh!
Go on, Katie.
Oh, no, Mrs. Cooper!
That'll be all, Katie.
Yes, sir. I wonder if the employment office is still open.
Just a minute, boy. Let's go have dinner, George.
Just a minute, Liz. What was it you were really going to tell me?
I was going to tell you about something I learned today.
Oh?
Yes. George, did you know that the female crocodile lays 3,000 eggs a year?
No.
Ain't that interesting?
Oh, very. I learned something very interesting today, too.
What was it?
The female auto driver gets 3,000 traffic tickets a year.
Well, that's interesting. Who told you?
Hey, little birdie.
That little birdie ought to keep her big beak shut.
It slipped out, and you should have told me yourself anyway.
Well, I was going to, George, but when you said you were elected chairman of Safety Week, I didn't dare.
I don't blame you.
George, how long does the drive last?
Until a week from Friday. They're having a big ceremony at the site of the new automobile club.
Oh.
And there's going to be a parade of all the drivers in town who haven't had an accident for 10 years.
Well, that'll be a short parade.
Look, Liz.
Huh?
Do you think you can possibly keep from getting a ticket while I'm chairman of this drive?
Oh, sure. I could leave the car in the garage.
Now, don't be smart. I'm very serious about... Hey, that's a good idea.
What is?
Leaving the car in the garage for the next week.
Oh, George, you wouldn't do that.
Well, it's a great idea. You suggested it yourself.
Oh, well, you mustn't listen to me. I'm mentally deficient.
Sorry, honey, it's all set.
Oh.
For the next week, the car remains in the garage, and the key to the garage will be in my pocket.
But, George, what am I supposed to do for a whole week?
Walk.
Walk?
Yes, you remember walking. You put your right foot out first, then your left foot, then your
all
right,
right
foot.
All right, all right.
Oh, come on, honey, don't be mad. I'll take you to a movie after dinner. There's a picture that reminds me of your driving.
What is it?
Panic in the Street.
Oh, no.
Probably Marge Van Tassel. I asked her to come over.
Hi, Marge. Come on in, dear.
Hello, honey. I came over as soon as I could. What's this big project you want me to help you with?
Well, you know how George has had the car locked in the garage all week.
Yeah?
Well, I've got to get it out today.
But why today? The safety drive will be over tonight, and George will take the car out for you.
I know. And guess what he's going to find on the left front corner of the car?
What?
No fender. George doesn't know it, but I ran into someone.
Who?
I don't know. But somewhere in this world tonight, there's a car with 5 fenders.
Oh.
And Marge, I just have to get it fixed.
What's your plan? Don't you have a duplicate key to the garage?
No.
Oh, wait, of course.
We used to keep one in this vase on the mantle.
I'll bet he's forgotten all about it.
Well, get it out. No key. What's this piece of paper?
Well, of all the nerve.
What's it say? Did you ever get fooled? Signed, George. He thinks he's so smart.
Well, speaking of the woman who's locked herself out of the house innumerable times, there's only one thing to do.
What's that?
Get a screwdriver. We'll take the garage door off.
Oh, dear. That sounds pretty drastic. Do we have to do that?
Well, we do, unless you think you can slip under the door.
Okay, then. I guess it's either take down the garage door or start hunting for a very thin, flat mechanic.
True or false? The United States finances most of the cost of the mutual defense program of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This is absolutely wrong, although it's a common misconception. Actually, our European allies spend $3 for each dollar supplied by the U.S. Every nation of the 15 making up NATO is the final judge of its own contribution, giving democratically and willingly to the common cause. Each in its own way, each according to its ability to contribute. That's how NATO countries operate this great force for peace.
As we look in on the Coopers once again, we find Liz and Marge Van Tassel in the backyard, gently removing the door from the garage.
We finally got the door off.
Yeah, but it's too bad we couldn't find a screwdriver.
Oh, well. The crowbar didn't splinter the door too much.
No, not too much.
On the way back from the repair shop, we'll look for a carpenter.
Yeah.
Well, let's hurry up and go. I have to get the car back before George gets home.
Okay.
And George thought he could put one over on me.
Ha! Well, what are we waiting for?
Marge, do you know how to start a car without a key?
Oh, no, Liz. What are we going to do?
What else? Give me that crowbar.
You can't use it on your car.
Oh, no, I guess not. There must be a way to start a car without a key. Let's get out and look under the hood.
That's a good idea.
Help me lift it up.
Okay.
Hmm. It's a motor, all right.
It sure is.
Where's the,
Where's what?
Where's anything?
Who knows? So confusing. How can a mechanic know where to find anything?
Oh, they just guess. Hey, I wonder if this would start it.
What?
These 8 little wires running down to those shiny white things. Maybe I ought to pull them out.
No, no, Liz. I wouldn't pull anything out.
No, I guess not.
Look. I didn't know cars had these.
What?
Oh, right here in front. There's a little propeller.
Oh, Marge, that's not a propeller.
It isn't?
It's an electric fan.
Oh, what's it doing in here?
Oh, anybody knows that. When the mechanic's working on the motor, it keeps him cool. Oh. Seems to me I heard George say once he used to start cars by putting a piece of metal across some wires.
Really?
Yeah, it sounds silly, but it's worth a try. Now, what do we use? Hand me a hairpin.
Here.
Gee, it's dark down in here. I can't see very well.
Well, wait a minute. I'll light a match.
No, don't bother. I found some wires.
Are they connected to anything?
Well, wait a minute.
I think so. Are you all right?
I can't hear you over the sound of the motor.
Ah, the motor! It's running.
All right.
Jump in the car.
Okay. Now, just a minute. How could I hit the garage doors when they aren't even on?
You ran over them.
Oh, no. Well, we'll have to keep going. Gee, that was one of my best backing jobs. Clear out of the driveway and into the street, and I didn't lay a wheel on one petunia.
Good for you, Liz. Well, what are we waiting for? Why don't you turn?
I can't.
Why not?
The steering wheel's locked.
Locked?
Yes, we've got the motor started, but I can't turn the wheel.
Oh, this is a fine mess. Say, do you think if I got in back and you got in front, we could lift it around?
No, that's no good.
Well, we have to do something. Here comes a car.
I see it. I'll pull up so he can go in back of me.
No, he's going in front of you. Back up.
Okay.
No, he's going in back of you. Go forward.
Well, what's the matter with him? Fenders over my quota.
Oh, what a nerve.
Hey, Marge, he really did us a favor.
What do you mean?
Look, he knocked the rear end around. Now we can drive down the street.
That's right. I guess every crumpled fender has a silver lining.
Sure, let's go.
Here, off to the repair shop.
What are you stopping for? We're faced the wrong way. The repair shop's in the other direction.
Well, turn around.
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's right. The steering wheel's locked.
Well, we have a choice, Marge. We can back up 10 blocks or drive around the world.
I've seen you back up. It'd be quicker to drive around the world.
Never mind. We'll go forward and keep a sharp lookout for a garage. Marge, we're almost through town. Don't you see a garage yet?
Not a sign of one. I wonder how much longer we're going to have to drive like this.
Who knows? Just hope there's a good mechanic in Hong Kong.
Liz, look out, look out! Here comes a car!
I see him.
He's coming right at us.
Well, I can't move. He'll have to.
He passed us on the wrong side.
He had to, Marge. I'm 3 feet from the left curve.
Clear over here.
Well, it's not my fault. I'm driving in a straight line. It's the street that's crooked.
Oh, here comes a cop.
Oh, no.
Pull over to the curb, lad. You hear me? Pull over to the curb.
I can't.
What?
Could you pull the curb over to me?
Could you explain driving on the left side of the street?
I don't know. He'll never believe the truth.
Oh, it's too bad we aren't in England.
England, that's it.
What?
All right, now what's the meaning of this?
Oh, tip-tip, chitty-o. Hello there, Bobby.
Oh, it's you.
Righto, old chap. It's me, all right.
What are you doing driving on the left-hand side of the street?
Oh, blimey, I keep forgetting. This isn't England, is it?
No, it isn't, and you aren't English.
Oh, my dear fellow, I am. You can ask my friend, Lady Van Tassel. Tell him, lady, am I English?
Ooh, boo, boo.
There you are, officer.
Well, all right, if you are so British, just... let's hear you sing the British anthem, huh?
British anthem?
Yes.
Certainly. You start, old girl.
No, you start.
Righto. London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, right?
All right! I'll give you about 2 minutes to get that car over to the right side of the road.
But I told you I can't. I can't turn the wheel.
Oh, you women drivers. Oh, come on, get out. I'll pull it up to the curb.
But, officer, look, there's something I have to tell you.
I've heard enough of your phony stories. Get out.
Officer, believe me, don't try to move this car. Your motorcycle's right in front of us. And
now, I hope I know enough about driving to miss my own motorcycle. Now, will you please keep quiet and let me handle this?
Thank you. Castle, I'd say we were in a bit of a nasty mess, what? Woo-hoo! You know, Marge, it was too bad about that policeman. I felt sorry for him.
Oh, I did, too. I guess they get attached to those motorcycles.
Yeah, they must. The last time I looked back, he was holding the broken handlebars in his lap and crying like a babe.
Oh, he'll get over it.
What's everybody honking for?
Oh, I don't know. The traffic certainly got heavy all of a sudden.
Yeah, they're all going in single file. Nobody's passing anybody.
Well, we must be in some sort of a parade.
Yeah, I wonder what kind...
Oh, my goodness, Marge, you don't suppose it's George's parade, do you? George's parade?
Yeah, the one he's reviewing. All the drivers in town who have driven 10 years without an accident.
Oh, it must be. Wait a minute. There's a reviewing stand ahead.
Where? I can't quite make... Oh! It's George!
We've got to get out of here! Turn the car around! Turn the car around!
What do you think I've been trying to do all afternoon, you big fathead?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry, Marge. What'll I do?
Oh, wait till the car ahead is out of the way and then speed past the stand.
Oh, I can't. There's a big excavation ahead and I can't turn.
That's where they're building the new auto club.
Oh, Marge, I can't let George see me. I'm going to stop.
Oh, you can't! What about the whole parade and back of it?
Well, they'll just have to wait till I figure this out. Now, what we can do... And tell me what you see.
I'm afraid. You look.
Okay. I see a wreck.
Just one?
Yep, just one. But it's 3 blocks long. There are very few drivers left in this town who haven't had an accident in the last 10 years. What's the matter?
Everybody's coming down off the stand.
Oh, dear.
The mayor, the chief of police, and George.
George, he'll let me out of here.
Well, ma'am, just what do you think you're doing? Liz!
I can explain everything, George.
Do your explaining later. Now, get that car out of here.
I can't, George. I can't turn
it. Oh, what are you talking about? Get out of the car. I'll do it.
But, George, that big hole in the ground is right ahead.
Now, keep quiet. You've caused enough trouble.
George, listen to me.
You keep quiet, too, Marge.
What?
Get out of the car.
Well, all right.
George, please.
Has been presented through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob. I thought I would jump in here to let you know that this episode is a repeat episode of one earlier. It says that in the notes that this is Stretch Snodgrass is in love again. No, actually it's more like Stretch Snodgrass is in love still. So, it's like that. So, but it's a clever episode, and one that's in very great sound quality, so enjoy it, and after this is The Halls of Ivy, which is not a repeat.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, quite a few romances have started between faculty members teaching at the same school. But for our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, romance is a problem.
It's really two problems. Problem number one is the object of my affections, Mr. Philip Boynton, biology teacher. He's so bashful, he won't even shave himself unless he's wearing a tie. And problem number two is the strict anti-fraternization rule laid down by Madison's beloved principal, Osgood Conklin. Of course, Mr. Boynton devised a very effective method of getting around this rule. He suggested that we stop seeing each other entirely. However, I immediately used my power of veto, and before he could take it to the General Assembly, we convened for two dates away from the school. The last date occurred on Wednesday night, and Thursday morning at breakfast, my landlady asked for the details.
Now tell me everything that happened last night, Connie.
We went to a movie, Mrs. Davis.
And?
And we came home.
And
fold up your program. The recital is over. Pass the cream, please.
But what did Mr. Boynton say? What did he do?
Nothing, nothing. Pass the cream.
I can't understand that man. Here he has date after date with a girl who's intelligent, attractive, wholesome.
Chic.
Chic, charming. And what does he do about it?
Nothing. Pass the cream. It's not that he isn't fond of me, Mrs. Davis, but he's been worried lately about someone very near and dear to him.
A relative?
Yes, his pet frog, McDougal. It seems with the cold weather coming on, Mac is very prone to laryngitis, and there are no heating facilities for the cages. The least the school should do is put some heating equipment in there.
Why doesn't Mr. Boynton ask Mr. Conklin for it?
Because Mr. Boynton is almost as terrified of Mr. Conklin as he is of me. We didn't dare ask him for anything.
Then you've got to do it, Connie. Don't you see? If you get the things he needs, Mr. Boynton won't be so preoccupied and worried when he's out on dates with you.
Well, it's worth a try, I guess. Now, if I can remember where I left it, I'll put my face on and get ready for Walter Denton. Walter's driving me to school again.
You mean your car is still in the repair shop?
Yes, the mechanic called yesterday and said it would take a bit longer this time. It seems they're having a little trouble with the motor.
What kind of trouble?
They've misplaced it. I'm glad you picked me up early today, Walter. I've got to stop into Mr. Conklin's office before my first class.
What a depressing way to start off the day. Oh, I'm glad I don't have to see our beloved principal this morning. I'm low enough already.
Low?
I feel gloomier than a school teacher's personality. Present company accepted, of course.
Of course. But what's the reason for this blue mood? Did Harriet Conklin give you the go-by?
Oh, no, no, ma'am. No, Harriet and I are still an item. It's Stretch Snodgrass who's preying on my mind.
Maybe that's because he hasn't got one of his own.
I know he's never been exactly a beacon of brilliance scholastically, Miss Brooks, but on that gridiron he's always been a tower of strength. Up to last week, that is.
What happened last week?
Well, you saw the game last Saturday. Didn't you see what he did?
Sure. He picked up a fumble and ran 85 yards with it. Of course, I couldn't quite figure out why I was the only one in my section who was cheering.
He ran the wrong way. That's how Oakhurst beat us on that one numbskull play. Oh, but if you think that was bad, you should see Stretch at practice. He's just awful out there. His blocking is positively sad, and his tackling's getting everybody down.
Isn't that what it's supposed to do?
Please, Miss Brooks, this is no laughing matter. If Stretch doesn't perk up, we'll lose our big game to Clay City next week.
Well, what do you think is the cause of this change in him, Walter?
Well, I know what it is. The big goof's in love.
Love?
And the trouble is he won't tell anybody who the girl is. Wait a minute. He's very fond of you, Miss Brooks. Maybe you could straighten him out. You know, have a talk with him and see
I'd like to help, Walter, but I've got a more pressing problem this morning. That's why I'm going straight to Mr. Conklin's office.
What could possibly be more pressing than Madison's winning the battle of the year?
My winning the battle of Boynton's lab.
Maybe it's none of my business, Daddy, but I don't think you should start the day off wearing such a long face.
I'm sorry, Harriet. If you'll turn your back for a moment, I'll put on a short face for you.
Well, what's the reason for it, anyhow? Why are you so despondent?
Because of our coach's report on Snodgrass, that's why. He's been playing abominably, and the coach knows the reason. The big moose is in love.
In love? But isn't there something we can do, Daddy?
If there was, I'd be doing it. You don't think I want to lose this game to Jason Brill's Clay City nincompoops, do you?
Of course not, Daddy. I know Mr. Brill's your arch rival.
He's worse than that. He's... No, what's the use? Just no way out. And there's no way I could possibly feel any worse than I do right now.
Have you thought of Miss Brooks, Daddy?
You have just shown me a way.
Well, Miss Brooks might be able to help. If there's one person in this school whom Stretch admires and respects, it's her. Maybe she could pull him out of his doldrums.
So you might have something there at that. As soon as she gets to school, I'll talk to... Come in.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Conklin. If you're busy, I'll come back later.
Not at all, Miss Brooks. Harriet was just leaving for her class. Run along, dear.
Okay, Daddy. See you later, Miss Brooks.
Goodbye, Harriet.
Sit down, won't you? Over here by my desk. That's the most comfortable chair.
Maybe you don't know who I am. It's Miss Brooks, Mr. Conklin.
I know it's Miss Brooks. And I'm delighted that you dropped in to see me this morning.
You are? Well, then it won't be so difficult to ask a favor of you.
You want a favor of me, Miss Brooks?
Yes, sir.
Now, isn't that a coincidence? I want a favor of you. One hand washes the other, eh?
That's as good a way as any to get them both clean. But my favor isn't exactly for
myself. I don't care what it is, Miss Brooks. If you do a favor for me, I'll do a favor for you. Or as my old commanding officer, Colonel Elliot Reed, used to say, you play ball with me, and I'll play ball with you. He was a Texan.
But what's your favor, Mr. Conklin?
Well, as you know, Madison's big football game with Clay City is to be played next week.
Yes, sir.
You are also aware of my intense rivalry with Jason Brill, their principal.
Yes, sir, but what do you want of me, Mr. Conklin?
Well, it's very simple, Miss Brooks. Perhaps you've heard about Snodgrass running the wrong way last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know that nobody with half a brain could make a mistake like that twice. Except, perhaps, Snodgrass. And that idiot woman a few rows behind me who kept cheering him.
Next Saturday, I'll keep my mouth shut. What do you think I can do about Stretch, Mr. Conklin?
Well, you may be able to straighten him out. You see, Miss Brooks, he's been even worse in practice this week than in that game last Saturday. And the coach seems to think it's because he's in love.
That's what Walter Denton thinks, too.
Does Denton know with whom?
No, nobody does.
Ah, exactly. And that's where you come in. In his lame-brained, dunce-like way, Snodgrass admires you greatly. He has his reasons, I'm sure.
We lame-brained dunces are pretty clannish.
Well, what I meant was, you seem to be the logical person to find out just what little baggage is turning Snodgrass's head. And I use the word advisedly.
And if I find out, then what?
Then your natural feminine instincts will come to the fore, and you will devise some way to circumvent the activities of the aforementioned bit of baggage. Now then, what is the favor you seek?
Well, Mr. Boynton needs some new equipment for the biology lab, and he's too timid to ask for it.
He shall have it. What kind of equipment?
Some heating facilities, for one thing, and more comfortable cages for his frogs and guinea pigs.
It's done. Anything else?
Else? Well, now that you mention it, I could use a new desk and some new window shades. I also would like to have my room painted a nice, cheerful shade of green.
Miss Brooks. You are speaking with Osgood Conklin, not Winner Take All.
Well, if you feel that way about it, maybe Stretch and his girl should be left alone. After all,
a nice, cheerful shade of green it is. Now, you're sure you know what to do, Miss Brooks?
Leave it to me, Mr. Conklin. When I get through with him, Stretch will not only check his baggage, he won't call for her for 30 days.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. More than 2 years' research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helped stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best, better than any other home method of oral hygiene. No other toothpaste or powder, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. Yes, Colgate Dental Cream, and only Colgate Dental Cream, was used in this research. So always use Colgate's to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And when you follow the Colgate way, Colgate Dental Cream stops tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
While it cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, I took advantage of a free period I had right before lunch and sought out Madison's moon-eyed mastodon, Stretch Snodgrass. I found him near the water fountain in the hall. He was slouching against the wall and seemed half asleep, but when I approached him, he snapped to attention.
Hi.
Hello, Stretch. I hope I'm not keeping you up. I mean, I hope I'm not keeping you from any of your classes, but I would like to talk to you for a few minutes.
You ain't keeping me from nothing, Miss Brooks. French class is the place which I'm supposed to have been at pretty soon from now. But my French can wait.
At least until your English catches up. Stretch, what I wanted to talk to you about was your football playing. You know yourself you're not playing as well as you used to, and a lot of your friends around here are beginning to worry about it.
Why should they worry? Gosh, just because I don't play over my head in every game, everybody gets all upset. After all, you don't get paid to play high school football.
I know, Stretch, but think of the future. Someday you may go to college. You must admit you've been letting down a bit lately.
Oh, I can't help it. This season's been nothing but practice, practice, practice. A guy can't go on like that with just all work and no play. After all, I ain't no auto matron.
No auto matron?
Well, you know, a mechanical man. The kind they call a Robert.
Oh.
Besides, a little relaxer never hurt nobody.
But Stretch, why should a young boy like yourself be yawning in the middle of the morning?
I'm tired.
I couldn't have thought of a better answer if I'd tried all day.
My new girlfriend thinks relaxing is good for me. She won't even let me quit rumbering and take her home till 1 a.m. It's been going on like that for the last 2 weeks.
Who is this new girlfriend, Stretch?
Oh, no, you don't.
No, I don't what?
You don't get Judy's name out of me. I promise to keep it a secret.
Well, that's your privilege. If you don't want me to know Judy's name, I'm not going to know Judy's name. That's all there is to that. Judy who?
Gosh, I didn't even want that part of her name to get out, but it just slipped. Look, Miss Brooks, you wouldn't want me to break a promise, would you?
Fervently. Listen, Stretch, even if you enjoy all this rumbering, Don't your girls' parents object to these late hours every night?
Oh, I'm sure they don't.
How can you be so sure?
Her old man gives me the money to take her out.
What?
Sure, he's not like our principal. Mr. Brill's a real good sport.
Stretch, do you mean to tell me you've been taking out Judy Brill?
How do you know?
A little bird brain told me. Oh, I can't wait to see Mr. Conklin's reaction to this bit of news.
Gosh, Miss Brooks, you're not going to tell Mr. Conklin, are you?
Not yet, Stretch. Out of consideration for his family, there's something I've got to find out first.
What's that?
If his life insurance is paid up. I've talked through your entire lunch, Mr. Boynton, but it couldn't be helped. If we're going to get any favors from Mr. Conklin, we've got to straighten out Stretch Snodgrass.
Well, I'm glad you told me the story, Miss Brooks. Imagine Jason Brill putting his own daughter up to a trick like that. What kind of a girl is this Judy Brill, anyhow?
Well, you know the expression, sweet 16 and never been kissed?
Yes.
When this kid reached 12, she was ineligible. I met her last summer, Mr. Boynton. It isn't generally known, but Mr. Brill wrote me a letter before the last semester began in which he hinted that if I were dissatisfied with Madison for any reason, he'd be happy to have me on the staff at his school.
Oh, he's approached several teachers here, Miss Brooks. It isn't that he wanted you so much. It's just that there are no lengths to which Mr. Brill won't go to harass Mr. Conklin.
Flatterer. But according to reports from some friends on the faculty at Clay City High, Judy Brill is quite a little firebrand. She's at an age now where she considers all males fair game.
There's an age?
This boy's been learning biology as well as teaching it. Look, Mr. Boynton, when I found out that Stretch was going with Jason Brill's daughter, I've devised a plan. We're going to beat Jason Brill at his own game and using the same kind of weapon.
But, Miss Brooks, I don't understand. Even if you and I were married today, where could we get a 16-year-old daughter by Saturday?
All these years of going to the zoo and you don't even know a fast stork. Don't you see, Mr. Boynton? All we have to do is to get Stretch to think that Judy is just a flirt and he'll lose all interest in her.
Well, how do we do that?
By letting Stretch catch her on a date with some other boy.
What other boy?
Walter Denton.
Walter Denton?
Did I hear somebody mention my name?
You're just in time, Walter. Sit down, please. Mr. Boynton and I would like to talk to you.
Okay. Have you thought of any way to get Stretch's mind off the mystery woman and back on his football game, Miss Brooks?
Yes, Walter. I've thought of a dilly of a plan. But it requires some cooperation from you.
Well, we should all do whatever we can, Walter. This is a crisis.
But what can I do? He won't even tell me the name of this chick.
The name of the chick is Judy Brill, and her father's been paying all expenses to keep Stretch out late every night rumbering.
Rumbering?
Yes. While the Clay City team is getting its rest, Judy Brill is keeping our star player's backfield in motion. But I know the kind of a boy Stretch is, and if we can arrange to have him catch Judy with another boyfriend, I know he'll forget all about her.
Well, not only forget about her, but it might make him so mad he'll go out on that field Saturday and play the game of his life.
Say, that sounds like a swell idea. Of course, Stretch is boxing champ of Madison, too, so it might not be so pleasant for the guy he catches with his girl. Well, that's a necessary risk, I guess. Who's the chump you've got lined up to be the patsy in this?
Don't be crude, Patsy. A wolf. I thought that you'd be happy to volunteer for this job.
Me?
Well, you want to see Madison beat Clay City, don't you?
Well, sure I do, but will I have my bandages off in time? Oh, you've never seen Stretch fight. I have.
Believe me, Walter, Mr. Boynton and I will make sure that Stretch doesn't lay a hand on you.
He doesn't have to. He could kick me to death. I'm afraid you'll just have to count me out, folks.
Oh, count you out? But Walter Stretch is a very dear friend of yours. You don't want to see him ruin his life, do you?
Don't you see, Walter, this girl isn't right for Stretch. It isn't just a football game that's involved. It's a boy's future.
But what about my future?
What about your future?
I want to be around when it gets here. Oh, look, Stretch has a terrible temper, and if he catches me making goo-goo eyes at his girl, he'll clobber me till I'm dismal. Besides, there's Harriet Conklin. Oh, we're virtually betrothed. What would she think if she heard I was out with another girl?
She won't hear, Walter. And even if she does, we can always explain that you were just doing it for the good of your school.
I'm sorry, I'd rather not take the chance.
I'm surprised at you, Walter. Haven't you any sense of loyalty?
Haven't you any school spirit? This whole thing won't take you more than half an hour. All you have to do is sit on the couch and put your arms around a little red-headed girl with big blue eyes, a cute little turned-up nose, and an adorable mouth.
But I still think that if Stretch... an adorable mouth... Nobody can say I haven't got any school spirit. What time and where?
We'll make it 8 o'clock tonight at my place. I'll drop over to Clay City High this afternoon and tell Judy I'm thinking of accepting her father's invitation to join the faculty there next term. Then I'll invite her over to my place for dinner, ostensibly so I can ask some questions about my new pupils.
But supposing she won't come?
Oh, she'll be glad to come. Judy Brill is just a little girl. To be asked to dinner by a woman like Miss Brooks is quite flattering. After all, when you get right down to ages...
When you get right down to ages, I'm almost twice as tall as Judy Brill. I'm glad you were able to come over this evening, Judy.
Me too, Miss Brooks. The dinner was wonderful, and I've enjoyed talking to you about your teaching at Clay City next term.
I suppose you feel you should be out dancing Stretch's feet off, but you've still got 3 nights before the big game, and not seeing you tonight will only make you more anxious.
You're so right. Men are such problems. They're just like children. You've got to play up to their ego and convince each one he's the only man in your life. Oh, but listen to me telling you about men. A sophisticated, charming woman like you. Oh, I just wish I had your knowledge of men.
Want to trade?
Very pleasant coincidence that Walter Denton dropped over, don't you think? He's an awfully cute boy.
Oh, I'm glad you like Walter, Judy. By the way, where did he disappear to?
I didn't disappear. She's on my lap.
Isn't that sweet? What a naive way to get acquainted.
You want me to answer it?
You sit right where you are, Walter.
Yes, you sit right where you are, Walter.
How can I help it? She hasn't budged off me since I said, how do you do, Miss Brill?
I'll get it, Walter.
Well, here we are, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Mr. Boynton. Come in, Stretch.
Thanks.
Well, what brings you to this part of town, Stretch?
Well, I was just walking home when Mr. Boynton drove up alongside the curb in his car and stuck his head out of the window and said, "Hi, Stretch, just the fellow I've been looking for. How about hopping in and going for a little ride over to Mrs. Brooks's place and having a glass of milk or something, if you haven't got anything better to do?" I didn't have anything better to do, so I said, "Okay, Mr. Boynton, I'd like nothing better than to hop in and go over to Miss Brooks's place for a glass of milk or something. Have you got any?"
What brings you to this part of town? I'll give you some milk later, Stretch. There are some friends of yours in the living room. Come on in. Pardon me, kids, but we've got company.
Hi, Walter. I didn't know that... Judy, what are you doing here?
Well, Miss Brooks invited me over to dinner, and then Walter just sort of dropped by.
You sort of dropped by?
Hold him, Miss Brooks!
Surround him, Mr. Boynton.
What's everybody so jumpy about?
Aren't you sore at me for sitting here with your girl?
Sore? Heck no, Walter, you do me a big favor. You see, I got to thinking about what Miss Brooks said this morning, and I realized that I got to get a lot more sleep if I'm going to be any good in the game Saturday.
Oh, but Stretch, dear, you don't have to sleep so much.
Well, sure I do. It ain't that I don't appreciate what you and your dad done for me, Judy, and I certainly ain't mad about all that rumbering.
It's just that for an athlete, rumbering's not as good as slumbering. Now, Walter, if I may make a suggestion, I think you should drop Miss Brill off at the bus station.
What's this all about, anyway? Is this some kind of a plot?
Turnabout is fair play, Miss Brill.
Yeah. And if you'll excuse me right now, I'll turn about and hit the road.
I'll excuse all of you right now. That is, all but you, Mr. Boynton.
Well, this is what I get for accepting the hospitality of a Madison Highite.
Thank you, and good night.
Don't slam the door.
Come on, Stretch. The least we can do is drop her off at the bus station. Good night, Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton.
Good night, folks.
Well, it's simmered down to just the two of us, Mr. Boynton. Let's sit down on the couch, hmm?
All right. You know, Miss Brooks, in spite of the fact that I'm a biologist, I've never been overly observant about the emotional reactions of the people around me.
You're not just beating your Bunsen burner, Boynton. That is, you have seemed a little preoccupied at times.
Well, be that as it may, Miss Brooks, your interest in the welfare of my little animals and the trouble you went to see that I got proper heating facilities for my lab have, well, they've made me realize just how much you care.
Really, Mr. Boynton?
Well, yes, yes, indeed. And I want you to know that I care even more than you do.
You care even more than I do?
Well, yes. I've got $5 bet on that game Saturday.
Well, here's $2.50. I'll take half of your bet, and we'll set up housekeeping on the 40-yard line.
Eve Arden returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a Luster Cream shampoo. Luster Cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid, Luster Cream is a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen, soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. No special rinse needed after a Luster Cream shampoo. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream shampoo.
And now, once again, here is Eve Arden.
Here's a message for every young man over 17 years of age. Your National Guard offers you opportunities to train in your spare time while living at home. Yes, train with your hometown buddies using Army and Air Force equipment under the direct supervision of veteran Army and Air Force instructors. You'll receive valuable military experience, increase your civilian skill, and at the same time, you'll be paid at regular service rates. Join the National Guard unit in your community now.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Leonard Smith, and Sandra Gould. Doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Yes, 36 leading skin specialists proved in tests on 1,285 different women that Palmolive soap facials using nothing but Palmolive brought new complexion beauty to 2 women out of 3. Just wash your face 3 times daily with Palmolive soap, each time for 60 seconds, massaging Palmolive's beauty lather onto your skin. Then rinse and pat dry. So start your Palmolive facials today. Remember, doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamont speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Presidents of colleges normally spend their days coping with complexities which would unseat the reason of lesser men. But Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy College, is able to maintain his serenity because number one faculty row is a little oasis of peace and sanity, well tended by his delightful wife, the former Victoria Cromwell of the London stage, from which and whom he's loath to depart each morning, as evidenced by his usual prolonged breakfast.
Give me another large cup of coffee, will you please, Vicky? Or as large an amount as you can get into this little cup.
Yes, Johnny, you've had three cups, and I don't think...
Well, I would hardly refer to three fillings of these eggshells as three cups of coffee, my darling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let us say I've had a cup of coffee divided like gall into three parts. I have a theory that cups like these were designed by the same vicious little man who distributes soap to hotel rooms. Probably the same tight-fisted misanthropist who got run out of Detroit for putting those tiny rear windows in convertible cars.
Yeah, he's probably, dear. But three cups of coffee for a man...
I don't remember where we got these cups, but I have a feeling that you brought them to me in your hope chest.
Well, as a matter of fact, you gave me this set years ago for a Christmas.
They were little keepsakes, no doubt, from your childhood set of... I did?
Yes.
Well, I didn't know then how much I would enjoy sitting at breakfast with you, my love, or what wonderful coffee you were capable of brewing.
Yeah, likely story, yes, I know.
Now, may I have some more, please?
Now, you don't really want any more coffee. You just want to postpone going to the office. What's the matter? Have you got problems today?
Yes, I meet with the financial committee, which appears to be suffering from psychosomatic color blindness. They say we're in the red, when the balance sheet is as blue as the lakes of Killarney.
Have you ever seen the lakes of Killarney?
Well, no.
Well, I thought not. All the time I was there, it was raining buckets, and the blue lakes of Killarney were a pale black.
Did you by any chance do Sweet Sorrow in Ireland?
Oh, yes. Looking back on it, I think I've played Sweet Sorrow everywhere but on top of Mount Everest.
And here at Ivy.
Well, yes, and if the Ivy Dramatic Club ever asked me to... What are you getting at?
Well, then I take it you haven't seen the current Ivy Bulletin. The Dramatic Club is going to do Sweet Sorrow.
No! Really? What did the bulletin say?
Well, as far as I can remember, it said, for its first production of the academic year, the Ivy Athenaeum Players will present the historic English romantic drama Sweet Sorrow. Of special interest to Ivy is the fact that it was this vehicle which brought Victoria Cromwell, the present wife of President Hall, who loves her devotedly, to unquestioned stardom in the British theatre.
What do they mean, the present wife of President Hall?
I can't think of a better word or a nicer present.
Well, it makes me sound frightfully temporary.
I will go to any lengths, my love, to make it permanent.
But, Tossie, won't it be fun to see Sweet Sorrow here at Ivy, bad as it was as a play?
Oh, I didn't think it was a bad play at all. I thought it was charming. I will admit, however, that your presence on the stage had a tendency to dull my critical judgment.
Did it?
I sat there scowling at the program rattlers, muttering at the latecomers, and beaming fatuously at the more appreciative members.
How about between the acts? What did you do then?
Oh, I don't know, darling. When you were off stage, my mind went with you.
Oh.
Incidentally, in Sweet Sorrow, what was the name of the leading man?
Cyril Ashford.
Ah, yes, mm-hmm. Cyril, yes. C-Y-R-I-L. Lyric, spelled backwards. Or wrong. Yeah. Cyril, the backward lyric. A human palindrome.
Well, it's nice to hear Cyril spoken of as human, but I've never heard him called a palindrome, whatever that is. And what is it?
Well, it's a sort of a backward lyric.
Hmm?
Well, a word, verse, or sentence which reads the same forward or backwards.
Oh, yes. You mean like, Madam, I'm Adam.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Or the well-known Napoleonic lament, Abel was I ere I saw Elba. Now, maybe I can make a palindrome of Cyril.
No, wait a minute. Let me see.
I'm
still trying to the other one.
Abel
was I.
Well, I...
Yeah,
no,
it was.
Yeah, no evil Cyril. Yeah, now reverse it. Lyric, live on.
Oh, no.
Why? Why am I wasting all this time on Cyril?
I don't know. I gather you didn't care for him.
My darling, as a theatrical critic, I am a George G. Nothing. Quite an absurdity, but even in my limited understanding of acting, I thought Mr. Ashford overplayed quite dreadfully. Or am I wrong?
No, no. Cyril is such a scenery chewer, he's on his fourth set of teeth. But he's a pleasant, harmless fellow. I'll answer it. Dr. Hall's residence.
Mrs. Hall?
Yes?
This is Ellen Kirby. I'm sorry to call you so early.
Well, that's all right, Ellen. What's up this morning, besides us?
Have you read the poll this morning?
Oh, you mean about Sweet Sorrow?
Yes. Do you mind?
Mind? Well, good heavens, I should say not. I think it's splendid.
We're putting a big thing in the program about you.
Oh, I better edit that.
And we're having a competition to select a girl to play your part. Will you judge the contest?
Well, I'd love it. Absolutely love it.
Oh, that's wonderful. But we wondered if you'd do one more thing for us.
Oh, I'll do anything but sell tickets, Ellen. With my arithmetic, that way lies bankruptcy.
We thought we might bring the contestants over to your house. And if you wouldn't mind reading your favorite scene, it would help them so much.
Oh, well, I don't think I should influence them. My favorite scene, huh? It would be the second act curtain, of course. No, I don't think I should.
Oh, really. Please, Mrs. Hall.
Well, wait a minute, Ellen. William?
Yes, my dear?
What time will you be home this afternoon?
Oh, I imagine you'll see me tottering up the walk with my lunch bucket and toolbox about 5.
About 5 o'clock? Well, fine. Can you come over around 3, Ellen?
Wonderful. You're a lamb. We'll be there. Bye.
Goodbye.
Why?
Why what?
Why did you ask me when I'd be home?
Oh, well, first, because I shall miss you.
Very nice.
And second, so I know when to have dinner. And third, because the house will be full of actresses to whom I happen to know you are irresistible.
We brought plenty of copies of the play, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, yes. Those are the printed copies, are they? The published ones?
Yes. We got them from the Samuel French Library.
Yes. I've never seen those before.
What scene would you like to do for us?
Oh, there's only one for me. It's at the end of the second act where the two lovers are torn apart, never to see each other again, and... Oh, I love playing that scene. We used to say it was the only known cure for the common cold. Nobody coughed for 25 minutes.
Two lovers.
Oh,
no. Oh, brother, I forgot that.
What?
We need a lover, and I forgot to bring a fella. What are we going to do for a man?
Vicky. Oh, Vicky.
Well, there's a fella. He's not supposed to be home yet, either.
Hello, darling. I'm afraid I'm interrupting.
Hello, Dr. Hall. Now, William, are you a quick study?
Well, in the matter of the orations of Plato, I remember committing to memory no less than 40 pages in a matter of less than 10 days. Homer's Odyssey took slightly longer, due to certain peculiar rhetorical structure. Oh. Then in the Anabasis, which was very small type...
Yeah, but I think that's enough, darling. Yeah, you're a quick study. All right, Ellen, here's the lover.
Highly recommended.
Dr. Hall?
Well, just a moment. I don't
now,
think
now,
I
William,
can...
William, dear, this is all in the interest of Ivy. Therefore, it's your duty. Now, have you met these girls? This is Ellen Kirby, Virginia Matthews, Alice Reiner, Eva Kiefer.
How do you do?
Now, they're competing for the lead in Sweet Sorrow, and they want me to read them a scene to get them started on their interpretation.
Splendid. Good luck with it.
Yeah, you'll play Cyril's part.
I will not play Cyril's part.
Oh, no, darling, really?
Ladies, you must understand, I am not an actor. It is not part of my training, except for a certain professional insincerity occasionally necessary when pleading a worthy cause before the Board of Governors. No, I'm sorry. History, yes, but histrionics, no. Those I leave in the capable hands of my highly experienced wife. I would feel like I had married Florence Nightingale and was advising her on how to shake a thermometer.
No, but you're not advising us, dear. You're simply supporting one of those worthy causes. Here, now take a script, will you?
Oh, no.
See, yes, it's on. Now, let me see. Let's start on page 48.
No, really, Victoria, this is...
Please, Dr. Hall.
Oh,
yes,
please.
We won't be critical. It's Mrs. Hall's part we want to hear.
Well, very well.
I
submit in the face of the superior numbers. Also, I am outnumbered by some very superior faces. But I warn you, this may well set the theater back to Euripides.
Well, now, you start, William. Second page. Yes. Top of the page, 48.
Listen to me, Helen. It is time for us to take off our masks. The music has stopped. The ball is over. This must be the end of pretense. From this moment, there must be nothing between us but honesty.
But Walter...
You must know that until I met you, my life was mere existence. I was a vegetable, growing forever deeper into the earth of my own solitude, getting bigger but not growing, a little blob of suspended animation, unwarmed by love and unaware of a bright sun somewhere beyond my ken.
Walter,
I have loved you from the moment I first saw you. Moment, do I say? Could a moment last as long as this? Could one moment be so crowded with memories of you? The fragrance of your hair, the music of your voice, the myriad tiny trivia which together conspire to light an empty room or fill the quiet night with melody.
But Walter...
And with that... filled as it was with an ocean of love, mountains of hope, and flowered valleys echoing with the words we had spoken in that same moment, I started to live a lie. To let you know that the man you knew was a man who did not exist. An automaton. In a shadow play.
But Walter!
This, then, was the sublime peak of my new existence and the grim depth of my despair. How could I gamble with your happiness, knowing the dice were loaded?
Walter, will you please?
So, my dearest, it is over. We must never meet again, either in this lovely life which held so great a promise, or in that hereafter where is held aloft the sword of final judgment. You see, Helen, I am not the Walter you knew. I'm William Tarander Hall, holding a script torn off at the bottom, and will somebody tell me, please, what to do?
I think you've done it.
I've never heard anything so beautiful in my life.
Thank you, Ellen. I hope it will be helpful in the interpretation of the part of Helen.
Yeah, part of Helen, I'm sure it will, yes.
Didn't you ever want to be an actor, Dr. Hall? Your voice.
Oh,
it sends cold chills up and down my spine.
Yeah, it did mine, too, although I doubt for the same reason. Ellen?
Yes, Mrs. Hall?
Now, look, you girls run along now. You get a hot water bottle for the cold chills. And start working on the first act. Now, I may have some suggestions a little later about the one we've just read.
Fine. We'll let you know when the contest is going to be. Thanks a lot, Mrs. Hall. And Dr. Hall, Oh, thank you.
You're welcome, girls. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. William.
Yes, my dear?
You read that scene beautifully.
Oh, well, first reading, you know, but thank you, Vicky. From you, that's a real compliment.
Mm. That's not the way we played the scene.
Oh, isn't it? I thought it played very well.
Oh, yes, it did. But as I remember, we made minor changes in rehearsal. I have my manuscript in my trunk in the attic. My own manuscript.
Oh, let me go up and get it for you.
No, thank you, darling. It's all right. It's good for me. I want to reduce.
Of Ivy, we find number one faculty row peculiarly silent. The hush is broken only by Mrs. Hall turning the pages of a script and a slight tapping as Dr. Hall knocks the unsmokable residue from a favorite pipe.
Oh, scared me.
Now be brave, darling. I'll get it. Dr. Hall speaking.
Hello, Dr. Hall. May I speak to Mrs. Hall? This is Ellen.
Ellen? Ellen who? Oh, Ellen. Yes, just a moment. For you, Vicky.
Well, thank you, Toddy. Hello, Ellen.
Mrs. Hall?
Yes. Have you decided who's going to play the part?
Not yet. We wondered if we could have another session at your house.
Well, why another session, Ellen? What's it for?
Well, I want to bring some boys over.
Boys?
Yes. We're sort of changing the contest around.
Well, don't tell me you're having a competition for the male lead, too.
Well, after we read it with you, we had a meeting and decided we'd better. So if you and Dr. Hall wouldn't mind reading that scene just once more...
Well, I'd be glad to go over the script with you, but the part of Helen is the big problem, isn't it?
Well, not really, Mrs. Hall. We figured anyone could play that.
You so, did, yeah.
We switched the competition to the tough part.
The tough part, yeah, thank you. Well, of course, Ellen, by all means, come over with the boys. But don't bother to bring the scripts. We'll use my original from the play.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Mrs. Hall. You are a lamb. Bye.
Goodbye, Ellen. Well, work to do.
Housework?
No, rehearsing. The show must go on, if you'll forgive the corny old cliché.
I'll forgive you anything. No. But the show must go on isn't corny, according to my definition. The show must go on because when a ticket is sold, a contract is made. When a patron's money is accepted, it's the responsibility of an actor to give his best as his part of the bargain, regardless of personal grief or distraction. So, when you say, the show must go on, say it bravely and without shame. You are merely recognizing the function of a ticket stub as a promissory note payable in performance. Now, in the Elizabethan theater, we find that the actors of the period...
Mrs. Hall, Dr. Hall, this is Spider Kenny.
How do you do?
Scoop Morgan, Punchy Clobber, and Dizzy Planter.
How do
you
do? Are you boys trying out for the male lead in Sweet Sorrow?
Yes, sir.
Well, you knew that, William.
Oh, yes, I know, darling, but I hadn't heard their first names before.
Oh.
Their families must have had a premonition of things to come when they were christened. I can see it now. The blazing vista of Broadway lights. A glittering marquee which reads, Spider, Scoop, Punchy, and Dizzy in Sweet Sorrow.
Well, our real first names are worse. Wyndham, Lennox, Grosvenor, and Fielding.
Oh, dear.
These are the best candidates, Dr. Hall. We've already eliminated everybody else.
Well, all right, boys. Now get as comfortable as you can and listen closely.
Of course, you must understand, gentlemen, that this is not my specialty. I'm simply trying to provide a sounding board for the lilting voice of my lovely wife. Please do not expect the performance of a Barrymore.
Well, you may have to work a little harder today. Are you all ready?
All ready now. I begin, don't I? Now, let's see. For page 48, I believe it was.
It was, yes. But I've made a slight change, William. This is my working script, you see. You just read the speeches marked Walter.
Oh. Yes, dear. I know the part. Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is the way we really did it. Are you ready, dear?
Just a moment, dear. All right.
Listen to me, Walter. It's time for us to take off our masks. The music has ended. The ball is over. This must be the end of pretense. From this moment, there must be nothing between us but honesty.
But Helen,
you must know that until I met you, a costume sham in which I danced through my days and wept through my nights as a doll on strings, pulled here and pulled there, until I found you. And I knew then, when I danced again, it would be to real music.
But, Helen, how can I...
I loved you from the moment I saw you. Moment, Walter. How could a moment last as long as this? How could one moment, shining as it was, be so crowded with memories? Your face, your arms, the kindness of your smile, the myriad tiny trivia which together conspire to light an empty room or fill a quiet night with melody.
Now, Helen, how can I...
I'm lost, Walter. It is the last small cry of one who wounds with good intent. I'm lost and terrified to think that we who possessed such lovely fantasy should lose it all in black reality.
But, Helen...
I have gambled with my own happiness, Walter. The wheel has spun, the ball has dropped, but I can't. I won't play with stakes which are not mine, but yours. For you, the game can go on. But I have lost. Oh,
no, Helen, no.
And so, my dearest, it's over.
Oh.
We must never meet again. Either in this lovely life, which held so much promise, or beyond that final curtain, which will fall upon our hopes and fears. For if parting is sweet sorrow, my dear, then the sweetness has been lost in parting, and only sorrow stays.
Oh, brother. Mrs. Hall, will you marry me?
The spider, I'll certainly consider it.
I imagine, boys, that you now have a pretty good idea of how Walter should be played.
Well, yes, sir, it's...
I'll say this, Dr. Hall. It sure changed my plans again. Is that the way you did it on the stage, Mrs. Hall?
Yeah, just about, yes.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know. You men flip a coin for the part of Walter. The real contest is between us women. Thanks a lot, Mrs. Hall.
Vicky.
Hmm?
I've been thinking.
What about?
About Cyril and the part of Walter.
Oh?
Now, the copies of the play the girls brought over. They are the published ones, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then undoubtedly that is the way the play was originally written. With Walter having the... where Helen didn't have...
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
And when did you give the last-minute switch to Cyril?
The second week of rehearsal.
Ah. Well, was he properly appreciative as an actor? Was he objective about it?
No, just objectionable. It was the biggest brawl since the Deputy Verbo fight.
And you went on playing those beautiful love scenes together for more than 2 years?
Oh, yes, but professionally you acquire a certain sense of detachment. The actor you're playing opposite is not a person, he's just a character.
Ah, poor Cyril. Lyric, live on. My heart bleeds for him, retroactively. All those big, fat speeches all taken away from him and given to you. Well, it's been an interesting day and an exhausting one. Vicky, is there anything tasty in the refrigerator?
Yes, a nice cold ham.
Oh, will you join me in a sandwich?
Oh, yes, let's have a huge one.
Good. But that reminds me. When I offered to go up to the attic for you, why did you say you wanted to reduce?
Oh, not me. The part of Walter needed reducing, Toddy. Yeah, did the result surprise you?
Surprise me? Darling, it left me practically speechless.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is money. M-O-N-E-Y.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho!
Don't be afraid, he's harmless. Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx! Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman, who gets first whack at it?
We invited some railroad conductors and some longshoremen to the show tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected conductor Carl Putt and longshoreman Clarence Blake. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, gents, to You Bet Your Life. And if either of you says the DeSoto Plymouth secret word, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you use every day. A conductor and a longshoreman, eh? Conductor, where are you from?
Originally from Des Moines, Iowa.
Tell me, who do you conduct for, the Los Angeles Philharmonic?
I'm a conductor for the Union Pacific Railroad.
What train do you work on?
City of Los Angeles.
Now, where do you go on your train?
I handle a run from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, Nevada.
The city of Los Angeles goes to Las Vegas?
The city of Los Angeles goes all the way to Chicago.
Must leave an awful big hole between Glendale and Long Beach. Well, that's where the city was yesterday. I was looking for it. Longshoreman Blake is your name? Where are you from?
Originally from Rome, New York.
How long a shoreman are you, Mr. Blake?
I don't think I know what you mean.
Well, frankly, I don't know what I mean either. Let's have another go at it, huh? How long do you have to be a longshoreman?
Oh, not very much.
You mean size has nothing to do with it, huh? Then you could be a short longshoreman, huh?
I suppose so.
Longshoreman, where do you work?
Down at San Pedro.
Where in San Pedro do you work?
On the docks.
The docks worked on each other, huh? What made you decide to become a longshoreman? Was it an urge to do uplifting work?
No, I believe I love the water.
Mm-hmm. Get that in the bathtub. You like the ocean, huh?
Yes, I do.
You like the sea. Why aren't you a sailor instead of a landlubber?
Well, that's not a very good way to raise a family.
That's not necessarily true. Fish manage pretty well. Huh? How far out to sea do you get as a longshoreman? Huh?
Oh, about 25 feet.
Clarence, your anchor is dragging. Huh? Now tell me, whistle stop. What are your duties as a conductor?
Well, to collect the tickets, see that the space is properly assigned, and to maintain the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought the engineer maintained the schedule.
No, I'm the head of the train.
I thought you looked familiar. You're the cowcatcher, in other words. Well, let's take an average day. What's the first thing you do when you report for work in the morning?
Compare your watch with a standard clock, and you check against inferior and superior trains.
Well, how do you tell an inferior train? Is it come from the wrong side of the tracks? What time does your train stop at San Badu?
In which direction?
Going along the track. Isn't that the customary direction?
Well, I mean going east or west.
It doesn't make any difference. East is east and west is west. And never the train shall meet. Well, tell me, conductor, what was your most unusual experience on your train?
Well, perhaps the most unusual was having babies arrive while en route.
You had a baby en route?
Well, yes, I've had two or three.
Well, was it an upper or a lower berth? Well, tell me, did you throw the kid off because he didn't have a ticket? Or...
No, the new arrival and the mother was put off at the first stop for hospitalization.
Oh, I see. That was probably the first time your train ever had an arrival ahead of schedule. Now, incidentally, suppose you're racing along and the stork decides to make a landing on your caboose and you have to stop the train. How do you instruct the engineer?
We have a system of whistle signals.
I have a whistle signal, too, but no one stops for it.
Well, one whistle when running means look to your orders.
Well, what do you stick your head out the window and whistle? Or?
No, we have a system of air whistles within the train. You pull a cord.
Okay, well, what's two whistles?
Two whistles when standing means to start. Two whistles when running is stop the train at once.
You want to throw the kid off, huh?
Yeah.
And what's the next one? Three whistles.
Three whistles when standing is back the train. Three whistles when running is stop at the next station.
Mm-hmm. Sounds to me like you're always on a toot on that train. How do you get the train started again?
We give the engineer a highball.
No wonder you're always on a toot, huh? What time is your train stop at San Badu?
Yesterday it was 7:21 westbound and 6:21 eastbound. I don't know what it is today.
Oh. Well, as soon as it stops, will you signal for a highball for me? Now that I know all about railroads and longshoremen, you're going to get your chance to win a lot of money, you bet your life.
Car owners all over the country are familiar with the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. There are more than 3,000 of these signs from one end of this nation to the other. And each and every one of them is a cordial invitation to you to come in and get acquainted. These dealers are certain that once they have a chance to serve you, you'll come back whenever you need service for your car. The folks at a DeSoto Plymouth Dealers will do their utmost to treat you fairly and squarely. That's their creed. It will pay you to give them a chance to show you what good service really means. So drive in next time you see the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth.
Now let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected farm animals and birds as your category. Is that right? Now you got $20. Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
What kind of a farm animal is an Aberdeen Angus?
Cow.
A cow is right.
And they're off to a great start with $30.
You conductor, you've been looking out the window. That's all right, now you got $30. What, how much are you going to bet?
$20.
$20. What kind of a farm animal is a percheron?
It's a horse.
Is a horse is right.
They're climbing, they have $50.
You stevedore, you've been loading horses, haven't you? All right, now you got $50. Here's your third question. How much of the 50 will you try?
$40.
$40. What kind of a farm animal is a toggenburg? T-O-G-G-E-N-B-U-R-G.
I think it's a goat.
A goat is right.
They're really climbing now. They have $90.
So how much of the 90 are you going to try?
50.
50 is right.
$50. What is a pole in China?
Pig.
Pig.
A pig is right.
And they wind up with $140.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Don't run away now. You might get a chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still money. Perhaps the next couple will say it. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a housewife and a gardener, and here they are. Mrs. Sarah Pinola and Mr. Arthur Anders meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, welcome, folks, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if one of you says the secret word while we're talking, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you use every day. A housewife and a gardener, eh? Mr. Anders? I presume you're the gentleman who does the gardening.
Yes, sir.
Are you married?
Yes.
Since you're a gardener, I'll bet I know what pet name you call your wife. Something you grow in your garden, it begins with a P. You know what I'm thinking of?
Mm-hmm. Petunia?
No, I was thinking of pumpkin. But you know your wife better than I do. By the way, what's your wife's first name?
Peggy.
No, I'm afraid I don't know. What's your hometown, Mrs. Pinola?
Racine, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
What sort of work does your husband do?
He works for Los Angeles Transit Line, a bus driver.
Mm-hmm. How'd you meet him?
I met him in a shooting gallery where I was working.
Was he half shot at the time?
No. Oh. He was very happy when he walked in.
Oh. How was he when he left? What do you mean he was happy? What were you doing at the shooting gallery?
I was working.
Were you one of the clay pigeons?
I was loading up. No. I was loading up the guns and taking their money.
Sarah, you just said money, and that's tonight's secret word, so you just won $100 in cash. Compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. I bet you think money really grows on trees, huh? Now, what were we discussing before you shook that money tree, huh?
How I met my husband.
Oh, yes. You were loaded in the gallery. Huh? What was your husband doing there?
He was taking an evening stroll.
To a shooting gallery?
No, he passed the shooting gallery.
Uh-huh.
So he saw a girl working there, which was me. And he thought, well, he's going to have some fun.
He's pretty shrewd, isn't he, huh? The minute he saw you, he said, that's a girl, huh? You can't fool old man Pinola. He knows his... So?
So He wanted to fool me, and he says, I bet I can outshoot you. But he didn't know what was coming. I says, okay. I says, see if you can outshoot me. So he shot about...
Is this verbatim?
He bought about $5 worth of shots. He'd take one round, and I'd take one round. And I kept beating him. He was mad. He put his hands in his pocket. He walked out. He was real mad. Then the next night he comes. I outshot him again. That went on for about a week. Well, he didn't spend
Well, how much,
much
did he spend by that time?
No, he must spend about $35 that week. Well, he was single. He could afford it.
So, by this time, you were beginning to suspect that...
So I said, oh, there's more to it than that. So
There's more to it than meets the bullseye, you say.
He says, I'm taking you out. He says, I'm going to show you. He says, if you can outshoot me on live game, he says, I'll marry you.
Kind of a curious proposal, isn't it?
We went, and I couldn't shoot at all.
You went where? Where'd you go?
We went hunting. It's in pheasant country up in Wisconsin. Oh. So we went hunting pheasants, and I'm ashamed to say I couldn't shoot a live game. Boy, he was good, though. He could shoot. But he says, I won't break your heart, honey. He says, I'll marry you anyway.
And did you love him by this time?
Oh, yeah. I liked him quite a bit.
Uh-huh. How old were you when all this happened, when you got married?
15.
15. Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to shoot a pheasant when you're 15, I guess. Now, tell me, Mr. Anderson, you're still here, aren't you?
Yeah.
Thought maybe you'd gone to seed. As a gardener, whom do you work for, Mr. Anderson?
Well, I work for myself.
You're in business for yourself, huh? Develop your business by running it into the ground, eh? Now, tell us, Chris, that's short for chrysanthemum. Do you know how to spell chrysanthemum?
Well, it's C-H-R... Well, you don't have to know how to spell them.
Mr. Anders, I'm aware of that, but... where's your factory? On Flower Street?
No, I don't have a factory.
Fine gardener doesn't even have a plant, huh? Specifically, what do you do in your job?
Oh, mow lawns, put in sprinkling systems, cultivate
plants.
I used to
know a fellow named Mow Lawn, huh? Have you planted anything in your garden lately, Sarah?
Yeah, I saw a cactus by some people we know, and I liked it, so I dug it out of their yard and made a hole in mine and put it in there.
Where were the people?
They were home.
Well, how did you plan it? You just dig a hole and stick it in?
I just dug a hole and put it in. I said, either it grows or it dies. I don't know.
Sarah, that's a pretty cynical attitude. Was she doing it the proper way, Mr. Anders?
Well, that's about right. It doesn't take too much knowledge to raise a cactus.
I guess the big trick is stealing the plant, huh? Are any flowers blooming this early in the year, Mr. Anders?
Well, there's quite a few early bloomers, I understand.
You mean on a windy day, huh? You say there are quite a few early bloomers. Do you ever find any ants in those early bloomers? This has been very educational, Mr. Anders, and you too, Sarah. Now, let's see if a gardener and a housewife will get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. You run your $20 into more than the other couples, and you get the chance. I can't tell you how much the first couple won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The conductor and the longshoreman earned $140.
You ready? Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected songs about the weather. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, how much of the 20 are you going to try?
10.
Give me the title of this weather song. Play, Jerry. Talk right up now.
Let it snow.
The lady says let it snow.
$20, Groucho.
How much of the 30 will you try?
20.
What is the name of this song? Okay, Jerry.
What April showers. showers.
Paper showers. They're climbing now. They have $50. All right, now you got $50. Here's your third question. How much of the 50 will you bet?
40.
$40. Is that all right with you? Here we go. Play it, Jerry.
We're having a heat wave.
We're having a heat wave. Now they have $90. All right, you've zoomed up to $90. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 90?
80.
$80. Give me the title of this song. Play, Jerry.
No, Stormy Weather.
Stormy Weather is right. And they wind up with $170. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $1,500 question. Fenneman, who's ahead?
Well, the housewife and the gardener are leading with $170, and the secret word is still money. Just before we went in the air, our studio audience selected Miss Margot Heister, a 10-cent store clerk, and Mr. J.C. Solomon, a diamond merchant. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers, and if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 instantly. It's a common word, something you use every day. Solomon, eh?
Right.
J.C. Solomon, eh? You're the diamond merchant, eh?
Right.
Where are you from, J.C.?
Chicago.
Thought maybe you'd be a stone's throw from Los Angeles, since you're in the diamond business, eh?
That's right.
You're from the Miss Heister? You're from the 10-cent store?
Yes, I am.
Which one?
Cress on Hollywood Boulevard.
Pretty fair-looking dish to be in 10-cent. What's your hometown, Margot?
Sun Valley.
Sun Valley, Idaho? Are you a good skier?
No.
You never did any skiing?
No.
Then? That's the way it goes. Eh? People in Brazil never drink coffee. Eh? People here can't afford it. Huh? Are you married, Margot?
Yes, I am.
Well, let's talk about diamonds, eh? Tell me, J.C., do you ever hand out samples?
I never hand out samples.
You don't give any diamonds
away. Don't give diamonds away.
Haven't you ever given just a tiny little diamond to a beautiful girl?
Yes, I did once.
You slippery old dog, you. Did you ever see that girl again?
Yes, I do. I married her.
Was that to get the diamond back? Do you handle anything besides diamonds, Mr. Solomon?
Yes, I do. Rubies, sapphires, emeralds.
Precious stone once cost me $500. Did I get gypped?
Well, what kind of a stone did you buy?
I didn't buy any. The doctor didn't say. He charged me $500 for removing it. What are the semi-precious stones?
Well, they are opals, tourmalines.
I thought that's something you found under your house.
Aquamarine.
What color are opals?
Opals are a variety of colors. Every color under the sun is an opal.
That isn't true. Opals are only pink. I watched her hanging them on the line only this morning. Huh? Which is the most valuable of all the stones, Mr. Solomon?
I should judge a diamond is about the most valuable stone.
Why are they so expensive? Is such a
because
big demand?
Because they are in demand. They are in demand.
Well, certainly is at my house, I know. We don't have any diamonds at my house, but there's certainly a big demand for them. How much do you charge for the average diamond?
Well, they run anywhere from $50 to $3,500 per carat.
It's a lot of money for a carat. I don't see how those rabbits can afford them. I think I'd better get back to figures I'm more accustomed to. Hello, Margot. How are you? What kind of rings are in greatest demand at your store?
Well, I think I'd say engagement and wedding rings.
I know a Satan gardener who bought one of your rings. Maybe that's why he's got a green thumb now. Do you sell diamonds and emeralds and rubies in your dime store?
Yes, we do. Hundreds of them every day.
You do? How much would you charge me for a diamond bracelet? A little one.
Various prices. It's according to quality, up to a dollar.
Well, that's very reasonable, Mr. Solomon. How can you have the nerve to charge thousands of dollars for a diamond when Margot here sells them for a buck?
Well, she sells you pure crystal glass.
Do you have any stones that would look good on me?
Oh, yes, I have a very nice stone that will look good on you.
No, I wasn't referring to a tombstone. I think I'll stick to Opal. She's more in my line. Well, I learned a lot tonight from you two about dime store diamonds. Now you're going to try for a chance at the $1,500 question. You beat our other two couples and you win the chance at all that money. I can't tell you how much the other two couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The housewife and the gardener are ahead with $170.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected nicknames of cities as your category. Is that right? You have $20. How much are you going to try and talk right out loud into the microphone?
$10.
What city is called the biggest little city in the world?
The biggest little city in the world.
Take a guess. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's Reno. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the $10 will you try?
I'll try $5.
$5? What city is called the Mile High City?
No, the Mile High City is the Big Bear Lake.
I'm sorry. You had the right altitude, but the wrong town. It's Denver.
They have $5, Groucho.
How much are you going to bet?
Three.
What city is called the City of Brotherly Love? Well, now you're down to $2. It was Philadelphia.
Oh, might as well.
It was Philadelphia. Should have known that from cream cheese. Now you're down to $2. Okay, here's your last chance to beat the other couple.
Yeah.
If you can beat the other couples with $2, Mr. Solomon,
yeah,
you're a pretty shrewd cookie. You know, how much you going to bet?
All of it.
All of it? Now, let's not go mad here. Right? How about $1.90, Mark?
Make it the whole $2.
The whole $2? What city is called the Windy City?
Chicago.
And they wind up with $4. Well, now, wait a minute. I don't want you to crawl away from here with only $4. I'm going to give you one more question. You get it right, and you're going to win $10. Remember, no coaching, please. You ready? Okay, now, put your thinking cap on. Who is buried in Grant's tomb? General Grant. Margo got it.
But they won $4, and that means the housewife and the gardener get the chance for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. You get the best equipment and the best workmanship whenever you take your car for service to an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. You get the benefit of factory-designed and approved tools and equipment. In addition, skilled mechanics who know how to use this equipment assure you of getting a better job done on your car in shorter time. This, of course, means money in your pocket. This also means a car that will serve you faithfully and economically mile after mile. So next time your car needs service, remember to stop in and get acquainted with a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. Learn what so many car owners all over this country already know, that it pays to stop in at the sign of an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here is the housewife and the gardener, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question, Groucho.
All right, you ready, Sarah?
Yeah.
Get your gun ready? Here we go, for $1,500. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully, and please, no help in the audience. The Earl of Beaconsfield was Prime Minister of England in the 60s, and under his statesmanship, Britain grew to her greatest glory. What was the name of the Earl of Beaconsfield? The answer you two have decided upon.
Chatsworth?
No, it was Disraeli. Oh. Benjamin Disraeli. I'm sorry, the correct answer is Benjamin Disraeli, so that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000.
Well, you lost the big money, but you won $170 in cash, plus $100 for saying the secret word. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth, two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week the big question will be worth $2,000. Folks, be sure to see the article about Groucho and You Bet Your Life in the current issue of Look magazine.
Well, Crosby's waiting in the wings, so good night, folks. And remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Good drivers don't brag about their ability to get out of tight spots. They stay out of them. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.